I'm Gigi Merello, I'm part of the Draco core development team, and I'm going to talk about a few patterns and one anti-pattern you might see only in Draco. Well, what is Draco? Draco is supposed to be the language for the next 100 years. It was designed initially as a successor language for Perl, which is why it was called initially Perl 6. Then it changed its name to Draco in 2019, October 2019. And the basic idea is it should be something that should stay relevant and stay useful for a long time, which is why it's a multi-paradigm language. It's a multi-paradigm language that includes object-oriented programming, but also functional programming. So it means that you can have objects, but you can also have functions. First, you can have querying, maps, and that kind of thing, MapReduce. It's also synchronous. You can work with promises. It's concurrent, you can have threads that work within many different levels. We're going to see how it works a little bit later. And then it's got full Unicode support. So it's updated to the last version of Unicode. It's using Unicode in any kind of identifiers. It's also got grammars, which is something quite unique. We will get to that later. This is a test of Draco. I'm going to show you a small script. It's only, as you see, it's 18 lines that creates three different threads. Two of the threads are computing using a formula, the digits of pi, and it's sending, it's using two different sequences to compute the digits of pi. And then there's another thread that's picking up those digits, putting them together, and then adding them and showing what you have so far. It's not an excellent formula. It's probably not the best way to do this because we are sending very small pieces of information to a thread and it's not going to be, and the formula is not very good either. But my point is I wanted to show you how these high level primitives like channels and so on and so forth work with Draco and how we can work with them. Right, so we create a channel, we send things to a channel using send, and we get messages from the channel, which are Draco objects, using whenever, right? So we receive this thing, we do stuff with them, right? This is, as you see, quite simple. We have three different threads. One of them is called 1, the other is 2, and then the other one is called p, because we're working with pi. And then we have a way that waits for them to end. Of course, this is never going to end, because there are infinite digits of pi, so it's going to loop until we say yes, stop, right? You see here, so the way we use the channel, which is it's a core data structure, is something we can work with from the get-go. I mean, one of the things in Draco is that you have everything and the kitchen sink, so you got everything to work without needing to use any kind of external libraries or dependencies. And then you see also three different ways of maybe four different ways of working with data structures. Channel is a scalar thing, so it's like an atomic, a single thing. So it's got a dollar in front, like this scalar thing. Then there's an ampersand, and we declare a function with it. This is a function that creates an infinite sequence. It's a lazy sequence. Those lazy sequences is what we are exploring little by little. We are sending to the channel, right? So we call that function that we just created with a number, and it's going to create sigma plus, which is an infinite sequence, right? And then sigma minus, which is also an infinite sequence that starts with a different number. This is how it works. You know, you can just run it using Draco. It's a compiled language. It's compiled to a virtual machine, but this works out of the box. We got a concurrent program working, you know, very fast and very efficiently, right? This is how it works. This is a test of Draco. But let's Draco and roll. Let's see some specific things that are going to help us find these unique patterns. One of them is roles or mixings. Roles or mixings contain composable attributes or methods or both. So you can declare an interface, you can declare just some attributes, or you can declare both, right? They are called different well, it's in different languages. It's like interface in Java, makes sense, whatever. But in this case, we can declare a role, right? But we can also use this mixing capability on the fly, like we are going to do here. What we are going to do here is we are going to create a list of things that are numbers, but at the same time, they contain some mixing that says if they are even or they are odd, right? So we do it right here. We create a loop over 10. We use map, which is a functional thing again. And then we say, okay, so what we're going to return is a regular number, but we are going to put on top of it like a layer or a read or mixing, which is whether it is or not even, right? You divide it by 2 and then you convert it to Boolean. How do we get to these 2 different natures of the number? Well, if we just print the regular thing, we have, you know, the regular thing, the number, and then we say, no, we don't want that thing. We know that already. We want that Boolean part that you put on the top. Say, okay, so we just use the type we put on top to add this thing, right? So the regular variable, dollar underscore, which is a thematic variable, dot bool, is going to put it in a Boolean context. I say, okay, so what you want is this other thing. Let's see another example, which is a little bit more complicated. In this case, we have a number that has a string mixing, which is the name of the number in Unicode, and then it's got a color. In this case, we are using some external module from the Raku ecosystem, which is called Corrisable. Corrisable, what it does is it says that this variable is going to be at the same time colorizable. You can put colors on it, and you can colorize that variable by calling something, right? So you see that in this case, we are using kappa, which is a number. We are putting the string on top of it, and we're saying it's going to be colorizable. And then we divide by 3 and say, okay, so we are dividing with 3. What do we want here? We want the number. But then we are calling colorize on psi, which is the name of the variable, and then by calling colorize on psi, it's understanding that what it needs to go is to its colorizable nature. So you see that this piggyback is allowing us to work with the different natures. You see that this works this way. You run it and you get all the name of the digits in different colors, right? Then we'll get to the first pattern. This is something that you would probably not see anywhere else. One of the things that Raku is type safe. So you can declare it's gradual typing actually. So you can declare type if you want. If you don't want, well, don't do it. But you can say, for instance, that that the return of a function, or of a routine, of a subroutine, subroutine in this case, is going to be an array of unsigned integers. And say, okay, so we are going to respect that. You are going to have your array of unsigned integers. But at the same time, we are going to put some things on top of that. We are going to tunnel through that type safe channel, right? So in the case we are going to work with numbers. We are going to obtain the factors of the number, and then if it's a perfect number, we give it a crown. If it's a prime number, we give it a tomato. And it probably needs a little bit of explanation. There's a ketchup branding spend that's called Prima, right? Prima, prime, prime, prima, right? So Prima is a ketchup. Prime are ketchup, but there's no emoji for ketchup. But ketchup is made of tomato. So from now on, primes are going to have a tomato. You see here that we return an array of things, the array of factors. We check different things, but in some particular cases, we say this is a prime or this is a perfect number. So we're going to put this thing on top. And when we print it, what we do is we don't care about the factors, right? We call it with the factors. We eventually don't care about the factors. We say we are going to put the result in a string context. So it's going to access the string that comes with the factors. Let's see it in action here. So let's see this light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to go to a cinema to check it out. And you see that at the beginning you have this little crown with the six, which is the only perfect number in this sequence. And then you see the rest of the tomatoes that are have come with that, right? So you see very interesting pattern. So it's something that you can use to add some any kind of metadata on top of the thing that you want to go through some argument, or you want to return a function, right? Then we are going to deal with a different things, grammars. Grammars are to regexes, to regular expression, what classes are to routines. So regexes are, it's like a function you apply and you extract some information. And then a routine is a function. It's a function you apply to some arguments and you get some result, right? You put routines together with some data you're going to work with in a class. Regexes, you put them together in a grammar, right? So a grammar is shows a sequence of how you are going to apply different regular expression, one beyond the other. Let's see an example. And this is extracted from my own book. This is called Recu Recipes, and it's got different grammars to analyze recipes. In this case, we're going to analyze the measurement of a recipe. So you know, have something like 3 tablespoons or half a cup or cloves. So we have grammars are declared with the keyword grammar, and then you have a token, and they're composed of tokens. The tokens are, let's assume it's just a regular expression, right? So in this token, we say, okay, so a measurement is a quantity, and then horizontal space, which might not appear, and unit, and then the quantity is going to be any kind of number. In this case, we are using real unicode numbers, and we're going to see it below. And then the unit is going to be grams or tablespoon or clove or cup or, and let's have an S behind, right? You see that this is the three tokens that we are going to define, right? And in this case, we show 3 different quantities that we want to parse. In the last case, it's a number in the Aegean script that means 8,000, right? It's just to show that we can actually see how it parses different kind of numbers due to this Unicode support in the regular expression, right? So what we do with this, you see, it behaves something like a class, right? So we say measurements parse $m, and it's going to parse all of them, right? This is what you are going to obtain. We're going to obtain that they match the grammar, and then it's extracting the different parts of the measurement, right? The number part and the other part. By the way, these were the ingredients in a question that I did Doritos and crisp omelette, which is something that I have never done again because my family forbid me to do it. So I liked it, actually. Anyway, here's a second unique pattern. It's called a grammar role. So basically, it's a role that can be composed into a grammar. So not only you can create grammars, you can also say, okay, so I have this pattern, this group of things that we are going. I'm going to use several occasions, right? I can use it for this. I can use it for a different thing, or it's something that I want to test independently, or something that I just like to separate so that I keep things modular. So in this case, we are going to have a role that are the measures. This is very similar to what we have before. Main different thing is that we don't have a top, right? You only have tokens. And in the tokens, we are going to use also, well, instead of putting right here the kind of different units that we are using, we are declaring it on top, right? And then beside the row, we have the grammar. And we say this grammar does measures. So this grammar is going to have mixed in the role that we had before. So that grammar is going to have all the things we have here, but also it's going to have the other we have on top, right? So it's going to have 5 tokens all in all, right? You see? It's basically that like a class would behave. That is why it's called a grammar role. It's a grammar but it's also a rule. Then in the grammar we have to put the top. There is nothing preventing us from having a top in a rule. I mean, it's just a name. It's just a name. In a grammar context, we know that it's going to be the first one that's going to be matched. It's going to be the one that's going to be returned. But you know, we just chose to do it in this main grammar. And then you see that we have the we can use the within the regular expression, we use the products that we declared before. We could have them, for instance, in a configuration file or whatever. I mean, this is just a way of showing the flexibility of the grammar. So they are very well integrated with the rest of the language, so you can do things in a very flexible way. In this case, we say we have a role because these measures could be used within measuring ingredients or within anything else or just by themselves. Actually, some roles, some grammar role can add by can parse things by itself, or can work with different things, right? So this is actually working, right? So we see that it parses things, and we could see how it works. But at the end of the day, it's going to be very similar to what we have already seen. It's going to show how different things work, and then we have a something that's an untyped pattern using the classic for index loops, right? So you have for I equal to whatever, then you you check for the end of the loop, and then you add something to it, right? This is the classic for, no? It's the classic for loop that you can see, and you know what they say about the C programmers, that they are so good that they can program C in any language. But that's considered an anti-pattern in RACU. As a matter of fact, we can't do it with for. So it's like you ask people who did RACU, you have a for loop just like any other language? And we say, no, we don't have it. But, you know, wait a minute, we have this thing, you scrape the bottom of the barrel, and you have this, you find this thing called loop. Right? So we have something called loop, which is the usual for. So that people make no mistake about we don't want this kind of thing. Anyway, this is how it works, right? So we have, in this case, we are also factoring some number, and we are checking whether it's prime or not. And in this case, we do a loop. You see that it's got the declaration of a variable, initialization of the variable. Then it checks whether we are arriving to the end of the loop, and then just some increment. Right, loop is a keyword. It gets three sentences, so you see that the semicolon is using regular for sentences, and well, basically the same thing. So what you do is you repeat the block once for every loop, right? And so we can call it from this subroutine to check for the factors of different numbers. You see also that we are declaring an array, actually it's a sequence, but something that contains lots of primes, and if you want to see if numbers are prime or not, the only thing you need to do is to use isPrime, which is a primitive in RACU, right? It's something that you can call on a number. You can do that. Takes a long time. Takes like 20 seconds or so to this kind of thing, but we really don't like it, right? There are some alternatives, and this is an alternative. Well, you can use for, but in the case you're using an implicit loop variable. The bad thing about these loops is that you have to declare a variable. The variable means nothing; it's meaningless. It's just running over a series of numbers. We do it much more efficiently doing this kind of thing, and we could do it. But we can even do it much better. In this case, we are doing something that's also very peculiar to RACU. We are declaring a list of functions. So every member of mothers, what it does is it contains a function. You know, it's calling this function with a particular value, right? And this pointy arrow is declaring a block that's also behaving like a function. So we are going to have a list of functions. But this list of functions not only contains a function, it contains the number that's that's used to create that function. So it's containing the what you use to divide, right? So you have a function, but that function is also a number. And this is going to be very useful because we are going to use that pattern of that mixing in this second loop. We are going to use it for every number. What we do is we only get the part of the sequence that's smaller than the number we're going to check, so that we only work with a number of factors. Then we apply the function to the number n here. You see, this dollar, in this case, it's acting like a function. So the function is going to be applied to dollar n, which is the part of the loop. Then eventually we are going to obtain, you see that here in asterisk in, once again, asterisk is kind of a placeholder, it's something that's going to receive a value in every part of the loop. So the number, that's a factor, we are going to obtain it by piggybacking here. So right here, it's acting like a function. Here and here, it's acting like a number. And we are telling it we want the number. So we call the number explicitly with the dot int, right? And then eventually, if it's a prime, so there are no factors, that means it's prime, so it gets the tomato. But here's the real kicker. The real kicker is that we are putting it inside a map, and it's a race map. So we are using it like a race. Race, what it does is make it parallel. So it's going to run in parallel. It's going to put it, Raku is going to spread it over all the available threads. By default, it's only 4 threads. So all these parts of the loop are going to run in parallel, which makes it very, very fast. You see it here. So it's running over the 5,000 members of the loop in basically 1 second. So if we had something that took around 15, 16 seconds, in this case we have it 1 second. You see, that's why we call it an anti-pattern. It's not that bad, only there are better ways of doing it, right? Anyway, you see that we have multiple paradigms. There are multiple patterns. There are many ways of doing these things. That's why we say there is more than one way to do it. There might be some ways that are slightly better. There are some other ways that are slightly worse or faster or show your thoughts in a better way. But in a case, you can do whatever you want. I mean, Raku is about diversity. It's about doing things in the way you want. That's why it's multi-paradigm. So this is why we tell you that give Raku a chance. So try it, test it, and that's it. Thank you very much.